Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey, welcome back to Faking Movies, everyone. This is episode 28. What's that faint sound I hear? Why,
oh my God.
Is that Tom Waits singing Christmas songs?
It's a real deconstruction.
Silent night, holy night. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Oh, okay.
That went a different way than I thought it would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your mouth looked like it was made from The Grudge or something.
Yeah. We need a new record.
So, oof. Oh yeah. So if our sub count has told us anything here at Faking Movies, it's that Tom Waits gets people to subscribe to our show.
So, inexplicably. That makes no fucking sense. Yeah. This is an abusive relationship. The more we be irritating, the more people seem to subscribe. It's like the dumbest thing ever.
Yep. Well, it's our modus operandi, though.
It is. Oh, we're not going to stop, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the only way I know how to get attention. It's negative attention, and as an only child, I crave so much of that.
Yeah. Right. We're all babies. It makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, woo! I guess you may have noticed, everyone, considering that this episode is coming out on Christmas Day, that we're doing a very special Christmas episode. Hey!
Yay!
Merry Christmas! Let's just get it clear from the start. It is Merry Christmas, right, guys? We're not a happy holiday kind of crowd, are we?
Fuck no.
No.
Not in my house or whatever. My America? I don't know. Oh, it feels bad.
Yeah, not in my America. Anyway. Yeah. So we did want to ask for one Christmas present before we get started from our fans.
Yeah, that's true.
Please, like, rate us on iTunes. Please. Like, you've already subscribed.
Just please
rate us.
Yeah.
It'll really help, because we're not famous already. We need your help.
Yeah.
That's
Lee really needs to quit his job. He fucking hates it. It's no good. So
that's true. I don't like it at all. So like, if we could be rich from this, that would be awesome.
Yeah. No, but for reals, the subs have been climbing, and that is just goddamn wonderful. Welcome, new listeners.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't actually know this, but I've been told from other podcasts that like rating and all that stuff helps quite a bit. So if you don't mind and you have a second, get in there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely helps when they're suggesting new podcasts to people. We would really appreciate that, because our word of mouth is only, however many friends we have, and we'd love to find a little larger of an audience.
Yeah, four those mouths are tired
for me.
Let me tell you.
Well, let's jump into it. Last week we teased that we were going to have a very special episode for Christmas time. An episode so special that we had to bring back a guest earlier than expected, because we just could not wait to do this episode.
Yeah, it's true.
Yep. First repeater. A little early, as Lee mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so we have back.
Get air!
Am I the only one that talks on this show suddenly?
Yeah,
like nobody else can jump in.
You're the intro dude for sure.
Yeah, man, that's for you.
This is the first fucking week that I'm doing an intro where Seth isn't screaming or farting over me. You're complaining.
Well, somebody got all upset last time, so...
How do you remember?
All right. Anyway. Eric is here, I guess. Okay. Hey, Erica, what's up? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yay.
Yay, Christmas.
Oh, boy.
So what are we faking today, Erica?
All right.
It's a doozy.
I've never seen Die Hard, guys. I've never seen Die Hard. What?
No. Impossible.
Yeah. So the only thing I know about Die Hard, before I got character lists, was Bruce Willis and Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers. And that's
hell
about
yeah.
it. That's literally yeah. all I do.
Can I tell you something else before we start, Erica?
If you'd like. Oh, that it's a Christmas movie?
Well, I mean, we didn't ask you to do it on Christmas for no reason, but what I wanted to tell you was when they play this movie on basic cable, the common edit to Yippee-ki-yay motherfucker is Yippee-ki-yay melon farmer.
What? No.
Yeah. Yes. Pretty wonderful.
So good. So good.
That's almost better.
Almost.
Anyway, so
yeah.
The,
so what we?
Sorry.
I was gonna say, what did we give you for cast?
So cast was Bruce Willis, Bonnie Bedelia, Reginald Vell Johnson, and Alan Rickman.
Hell yeah! Mm-hmm.
So I forget if I mentioned this or not. Do you know who Reginald Vell Johnson is?
I actually Googled him because I didn't know what he looked mm-hmm. like. And he's
good,
from,
good, good.
He's from Urkel. That TV
yep.
show.
Okay, good.
He's from Urkel.
He's from that TV show called Urkel.
Whatever, he's the dad.
He played the patriarch of the Winslow clan.
He played old mm-hmm. Urkel, I think. Yeah. Future Urkel. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he does play old Urkel in one episode.
It was Fat Urkel.
What?
Jesus.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's an episode where Carl goes into Urkel's transformation machine and he gets turned into Urkel.
Wow.
Huh. Wait, hot Urkel or like regular Urkel?
Yeah,
no. He did not get turned into. He did not get turned into Stefan Urkel. He got turned into
Stefan.
Excuse
me. Yeah. Uh-huh,
oh, okay. That's
man. Malcolm Jaleel White is still doing real good. He looks great these days.
Black don't crack.
CSI and shit.
Black don't crack.
Guys and listeners, everybody, if what you should do right now is pause the podcast and go on YouTube and look for Stefan Urkel, The Mac. Someone made a 20-minute loop of the Usher song, The Mac, set to videos of Stefan Urkel.
Is that an Usher song?
Yes.
Oh,
they
no.
They call me The Mac.
I'm going to need more than that.
I don't know.
No, that's it.
It's no okay. Tom Waits. We only get 3 seconds of that.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So banging cast. Just mm-hmm. Screaming. Yeah, real good.
Oh, and there's some ties to one of our previous episodes. Zach, you mentioned that Bonnie Bedelia is a member of the Culkin clan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's like a weird aunt or something. Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think her acting career spanned much more than this movie, though.
No, I think she's still currently an actress, because I saw all pictures of her being rolled.
Oh, well, she's probably still a person, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
No, like, I think she's, like, still acting and old now.
Oh, okay. Really? Well, I don't know that I recognize her, so that's fair.
She has not dissipated into the ether.
Not quite yet.
Yeah. She's oozed into the sewer grate or the ether. Yeah, whatever old people do. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly like TV movies at this point, but.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
I think she's a lifetime all-star.
Ooh. Yeah.
I mean, they've been steady for like, what, majority of our lives, so good on her.
Yeah, for sure.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. All right, well, you want to kick us off there? Go nuts.
So this is kind of set in a big city, kind of nondescript, sort of like New York City or, I don't know, Chicago, something like that. Anyways, mm-hmm. Bruce Willis works at a nurse. He's a nurse at a local hospital, and Reginald and Alan are patients of his that he kind of befriends. And he kind of he discovers that their health insurance basically will no longer cover the care of either man, and both of them kind of like not great diagnoses. And they're kind of like hinted that they're not going to be long for this world. So they kind of get kicked out of the hospital, and Bruce obviously feels bad about this and makes sure he stays in contact, and he's trying to make sure they're comfortable at their respective houses, but it's like it's very clear they're living substandard lives. And it's getting around Christmas time, and they finds out that they're like struggling to keep the lights on. And so he kind of comes up with this plan of if he and these two guys commit crimes, then when they get arrested, Alan and Reginald get the care that they need, cause they need to go through like trial and stuff. And so he says the phrase, if you're going to die, we should die hard.
Okay.
You're getting it out of the way early this
time.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay.
Checking the boxes.
I learned from my mistakes, guys. I learned from my mistakes, okay?
I was going to say, you're setting this up to be like a real bummer, and I was like, how is she going to work Yippie-Ki-Yay Melon Farmer into this? That's hard. There's just like some terminal cancer patients.
Yeah, like it's kind of a downer. No, I'm sorry. So Bruce does all the planning, kind of like scouts out the banks and things, because obviously like Alan and Reginald kind of sick, not really, you know, up for that gig. And so they find this bank, and they dress up like Santa Claus, and Bruce runs in screaming, "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers!" Right before, like, firing his gun up into the air and everybody hits the floor.
Playing all the hits.
Yeah. And then, like, the first bank robbery goes really well, and they manage to get out without getting caught, and there's, like, this montage of them holding up, like, department stores and other banks and, like, just other businesses in general. And they're straight up rolling in cash.
They're getting sloppy though if they're hitting up like.
Well, I mean that's kind of the
There's no good exit strategy from a
store on Christmas. That's when they have the most money.
Right.
Oh yeah. Bad Santa.
I'm not sure a department store is the same as a casino on like fight night.
Yeah, right. Potato. Anyways,
Bad Santa, that's a thing. Yeah.
That's true.
But at first, they were like responsible.
Well, Brinks doesn't
do
pickups on Christmas Eve, and they're closed on Christmas. So you break in on Christmas Day, you get all the money.
And a day to escape, I think.
I don't think that's how it works.
Very
unclear.
Anyways.
So at first they're like really responsible and they're paying their hospital bills and getting their meds and, you know, go whatever. But eventually the money gets too much and they get greedy and they decide to do some, you know, stupid fun things like bucket list style. And they're enjoying their stolen money. Meanwhile, Bonnie Bedelia, she's a leading investigator into the robbery division. And she's trying to crack the case and figure out, like, what's going on here. And she gets a lead that from one of the witnesses that one of the robbers was caught coughing and somebody else, you know, name dropped some medication that they used. And she, you know, traces this medication back and finds out that it's used in chemotherapy. And she goes to the local hospital, and Bruce happens to be working there, and so she kind of interviews him a little bit about, like, the meds and what it's used for and, you know, that kind of thing, and, like, how would they go about in getting it and that kind of thing.
That's just bad criming right there. That's like, I'm committing a crime. My social security number is 24019. Like,
I mean, these bitches are going to die, right?
Talk about your chemo medication.
Hey, right. Zach. How much of that was your social security number?
Yeah. Oh, no. I was thinking about that joke for 10 seconds, making sure to make those none of my digits for the social security number. It was hard not to.
Jesus.
Also, that's good. Because I was going to say, then we have the same social security number because you nailed mine.
Yeah, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah.
All right. Well. After the interview, Bruce goes to the others and he's like, the police are on to us. We should just turn ourselves in and be done with it because that's like the whole point, right? So that the state takes over their bills and kind of pays for everything. And the other's kind of like, nah, we got too much money. We want to do something fun. We want to run away to somewhere warm and enjoy what little life they have. But Bruce kind of wants to stick to the original plan. And then they have this big fight and can't decide how to proceed. But meanwhile, they've also planned this, like, the last heist or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one last job.
Yeah.
It's very
always
important.
Always important. You
have to have one last job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
It's pretty much obligatory.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. Bonnie is, like, she's gotten records for Bruce because he was being cagey, and she just was like, yo, bitch is suspicious, can't, you know, gotta look into this a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And
so, wait, so sorry, she's not, like, on board for this? I mean, she was sympathetic in the oh, no, she's the detective.
Bruce she's the detective. Yeah. Bruce
yeah.
is the nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
I was doing gender normativity. That was no good. Okay. Mm-hmm. Continue.
Anyway, so Bruce, so she gets the records for the patients that Bruce has been taking care of, and she finds, you know, that Alan and Reginald have been, like, went from, like, missing payments to the hospital to making everything on time, with no obvious change in, like, prognosis or, like, money situation or anything like that.
And the hospital's clearly not going to ask questions about that, so.
No.
Yeah. No one would have even
They're getting
cared.
Their money.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Money, please. Money, please.
Pretty much, yeah. And so, like, so she decides to kind of follow up, and she follows Reginald as he kind of puts on his sandal suit and heads out to the bank. And then, you know, obviously she calls it in. There's this big, huge standoff and everybody kind of, you know, says hands up, whatever. And then, you know, obviously Reginald
and
Alan
not going to put up much of a fight because they're old guys and cancer patients.
Pretty much. So, so
they're just
going to
be like, yeah, okay, fine.
Reginald and Alan basically take responsibility for everything, even though Bruce kind of planned it all and really is the instigator in all this situation.
Yeah, he's the mastermind.
Right. But they go into a prison where they're kind of their health is attended to without any additional charges and, you know, that kind of thing. And Bruce gets kind of like a minimum sentence, basically, for participating in these bank robberies and things.
Yeah, because the judge is like, this is, I have to punish you, but, like, do you deserve to be punished?
Right.
No.
Then the final kind of scene is, you know, a funeral of either Reginald or Alan. It's so unclear. And Bruce
Why not
is
both.
Well, I don't. I mean, it's not like they're love-struck lovers that took poison and stabbed each other. It's more like, you know,
hey, it's,
they got cancer and shit.
The world is your oyster, man. Like,
I guess. Okay, so I will revise that, and it is both their funerals. They happen to be buried in the same prison. Because
they were in love.
Same. I don't. Okay. We went off.
They're buried in a heart-shaped. Yeah, they're buried in a heart-shaped coffin where their pelvises touch and they hold hands, staring each other's eyes forever.
Oh, that's, it's yeah. It's loving and also sexual. Weird.
Okay. Well, this turned from a Christmas movie to maybe a porno. Anyways, so
potato
porno with dead people in it. It's necrophilia for
potato
Christmas.
Potato porno.
All right. Regardless, Bruce is still handcuffed. He's
hey, wait.
There
does two dead people fucking each other count as necrophilia, or like what's the deal? Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah.
How does necrophilia it work if they're reanimated dead? Both members are dead.
Guys, Sarah just took the most abused crown. I want her to have at least a couple weeks. Like, let's.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's Bruce going to their funerals in handcuffs, and then there's the last scene that we see is him being released from prison. And then,
that's,
you know,
nice.
I know there's sequels to all these movies, so Bruce is still free and
so
alive.
Many. Yeah, so many. Yep.
Ta-da!
Cool. Okay.
The end.
Great.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait, is well, it too late for this, guys? Let me just... Mr. Can I Fuck This Corpse? For my mama, please.
Oh, it's always too late for that, I think.
Yeah, that was horrible. That's...
No. Yeah. Hey. Is that the that's the alternate verse for Christmas Shoes?
I'm aware. Uh-huh, I caught really on. I heard that.
You guys knew? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I definitely did not. I absolutely did not understand what was happening.
So it's a song about a little kid whose mom... No, it's a song about a little kid whose mom is dying, and he wants to get her a very special Christmas present.
And he says, Mister, can I fuck a corpse?
So that she can wear them in her casket.
Well, he wants her to be able to get off one last time before she goes to meet Jesus, and her big fetish is fucking corpses.
That's the good son, one might say. Yuck. I hate myself.
Oh, God. Put the Christ back in Christmas, am I right, guys?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
something,
indeed.
Something okay, like so, that.
Y'all need some more Jesus.
Y'all need Jesus.
And that's coming from me.
All right, so it's safe to say you got pretty close, I'd say, right?
I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this, Erica. You wrote an uplifting Christmas movie. And like with a very unique plot for a Christmas movie. I liked it.
Yep. You did not, however, write Die Hard, sadly.
Yeah. No, not at all.
That's okay.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Would you like the IMDb summary?
Sure. Let me hear it.
Well, it's got
two old guys get cancer.
One of them is Alan Rickman. The other is...
If I laugh while I'm pouring wine, Zach has to leave my wine pours in the podcast.
That's fair.
Oh, yep. Okay. So the summary. The summary is John McClane, officer of the NYPD. Tries to save his wife Holly Gennaro and several others that were taken hostage by German terrorist Hans Gruber during a Christmas party at the Nakatomi Plaza in Los Angeles.
Why so many name drops in that?
I know, it's really
They drop all the characters' names, but no one knows those if they haven't seen the movie. That makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, it's not like it's a historical documentary where you would... Right, Hans Gruber.
Oh, yeah.
I remember him.
Right.
So is Reginald the German?
From history class.
Is Reginald the German? No.
Wait, of all of those characters, you would pick Reginald?
There are black Germans out there.
Well, yeah, of
true.
Course,
but...
Radio silence.
No. Zach, you leave that silence in there. You leave that silence. You let your racism hit.
The famed, the loved Alan Rickman is the villain in this. And he's wonderful.
Rip Rickman. Yes.
Oh, yeah. hard rip. Died at, I believe, 69. Nice. Oh, I hate myself. I hate myself again.
Yeah, that was rough, dude.
Yeah, him and Bowie both, I think. Sad.
So, okay.
Well, now you ruined the Christmas episode.
Oh, no.
Zach ruined again. It, not Lee. Not Lee with his corpse fucking song.
No, because...
Yeah, oddly enough.
I
mean, check out our backdated Hanukkah episode and our maybe super backdated Kwanzaa episode.
Oh.
Or Easter. Someday. Maybe we'll do an Easter. I don't know.
Yeah, someday. Someday. How do we want to break into talking about Die Hard, guys?
Do we want to start with our
three-word summaries?
Sure.
Yeah, we could do three-word summaries. Who wants to go first? Maybe Lee?
Yep.
Sure. I'm going to give my three-word summary because it flows nicely into some of the notes that I had, because most of my notes are behind-the-scenes kind of stuff that I looked up.
Okay.
So my three-word summary is almost starring Sinatra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a crazy fact.
Okay. So, Erica... Die Hard, which is an action movie set in a office building.
Uh-huh.
Starring Bruce Willis.
In the late 80s, let's say. Yeah.
In the late 80s, was based on a novel. The novel that it was based on was the sequel to another novel. That first novel was turned into a movie that starred Frank Sinatra. And because of that, the studio was obligated to offer him the role first.
Oh, I've heard that before.
The best...
I think.
Yeah, okay. So the best part about that was Frank Sinatra was in his mid-70s at the time.
Yeah, he was, like, almost dead.
Yeah.
Wisely turned it down. Good. So I wanted to talk about all the other people who turned this role down before they gave it to Bruce Willis.
Jesus.
Well, and we should say first, this role, that this movie was wildly successful and is also very good. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it resulted in some terrible things though, which I'll talk about during my notes.
Good.
Ooh,
good,
terrific.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there were rumors that Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to star in it. But apparently those were not true. Yeah, it was supposed to be, they were going to rewrite it as a sequel to another Arnold Schwarzenegger action movie, but that's apparently not true.
Wait, which one?
Yeah, Commando.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So,
I mean, it would have been timely, at least. Like, he was incredibly famous right
then. I guess.
This was like a year or two after, so it was definitely the right time.
I would argue he's still famous.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It was like peak or right before peak when this came out. Yeah.
It was peak Schwarzenegger action movie time. I gave a little bit of a spoiler for some of the other people who have turned this movie down. Stallone, Harrison Ford, Don Johnson, the guy from Miami Vice,
Whoa.
And Tim Cook.
Don Johnson.
I think you mean Nash Bridges.
Yeah. You mean Nash Bridges, which came on before Martial Law, starring Sammo Hung and Arsenio Hall?
It sure did. I mean, Nash Bridges' partner was Cheech Marin, so, I mean, we're just hitting all the bases there.
Sure enough.
And Don Johnson met on the set of and they decided they wanted to do a show together, and that's how Nash Bridges was born.
Wow, that's insane. Getting bleeped.
That's a blooper right there. Well done. Okay. Yeah.
That is just an insane, insane fact.
That is madness. Oh. I would watch that movie, to be fair.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Also, Richard Gere, Clint Eastwood, and Burt Reynolds.
They offered it to Richard Gere. Has Richard Gere ever been in an action movie?
No. Super no. Super duper
no. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, that one weird. Of these things is not like the others. Even Bert's been in some romp adventure movies, but not like an action movie per se. Yeah.
No, he did a lot of action movies in the '70s.
Oh, all right, fair enough.
I don't watch shitty.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, with good reason.
Yeah.
And I wanted to mention one other thing about the behind the scenes, or two things. So. Rip Allen Rickman plays the villain Hans Gruber, and in the original script he is the main character.
Really?
And then
he's the sympathetic main character, or
no, he's still a villain but he is the main character. The studio was like, we need the main character to be the hero of the story. And he was like, okay, fine. But he's still like...
Yeah, you mean like all stories ever? Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But they still structured the script so that Alan Rickman's character, everything he does is what actually drives the action of the story, even though he's not the main character anymore.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, that holds up. That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was his very first major role, also.
It was,
also,
yeah.
To be fair, doesn't the villain kind of drive the story regardless? Like,
kind of a narrative thing.
The antagonist often does, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, Rickman is fucking so good in this. Yeah. Oh, so
well,
good.
So the whole idea for the structure of the script is that Alan Rickman is playing what would, like... traditionally be an antagonist, but yeah. the way his actions work in the movie, it's actually like he's the protagonist. He's just also the villain.
Okay. All right.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying that they accomplished that. I'm just saying that was their intention.
That was their intention. Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, I'm having trouble imagining it, but yeah.
And so the last thing I wanted to mention, the original script for the movie, Die Hard, takes place over 3 days.
Ooh.
But the director decided that he wanted it to happen in one night because he really liked A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Notably not because all hostage situations, like a hostage situation does not last 3 days. There's no world in which that happens. Somehow that wasn't the onus for it. It was, I like A Midsummer Night's Dream because I'm an idiot, like, apparently.
So he liked all the chaos that happened in Midsummer's Night Dream compressed into, like, I don't know, 8 hours. So he decided to do it.
I think that's it. Yeah, he wanted it all to happen in a very short time span.
I think I can get behind that.
Yeah, it was very effective, but that's a very dumb reason to do that, for sure.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's a crazy fucking reason, but...
Yeah, I just assumed they wanted it to be a Christmas miracle when John McClane explodes that building.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Which time, bro? Which time?
Yeah. Oh, true fact.
Yeah.
All right, Seth, do you have a three-word?
Well, my three word is your head usplode. Because like there are so many heads exploding in this movie.
Yeah. A lot of squib work.
Yeah, but in people's faces. Like that's the thing. Yeah. Is like there's a lot of execution style killing.
There's just like brains everywhere.
And when they do, there's just like it's like people's heads are made of light bulbs filled with jello.
Like Mars Attacks. Like Mars Attacks.
Yeah, kind of like that.
But not as a parody, like Mars Attacks.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's head in this movie was made out of the Macaulay Culkin plastic bag full of blood from The Good Son.
Oh, we're back.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. There it is. We found it.
That's a callback for our dedicated.
That's a good callback. It's a good callback, guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Spiritual sequel.
So
it came out first.
Oh, right. Shit. Spiritual, whatever the antithesis of a prequel is. I don't know.
You are all over the map right now, man.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Words. All right, go.
You're lost in the woods.
So Zach, what is your
dashing through the snow?
My three word is ouch, my feet.
Is particularly brutal.
John, so one of the things I noted, John McClane takes a fucking world-class beating in this movie.
Yeah, like, he really does.
Okay, wait, we have to back up because you say, ouch, my feet. Everybody says, oh yeah, that was horrible. But nobody says what happened.
We're getting
to that in the plot, obviously.
The basic plot is he goes to visit his wife who works at this big company. The baddies,
they are kind of separated at the time. That's one of the tensions in the movie.
So that's another thing I wrote down.
He's like stalking her.
No,
she wanted him there.
Yeah.
All right.
They do, however, make a point to say that they are separated or show that they are separated about 650 times in this movie.
Yeah, it's true. That's the exact number.
Yeah. It's so many times. Like, they beat that horse to absolute death. It's ridiculous. It's true. So he shows up to visit her. They're having their Christmas party. The baddies show up to steal a bunch of money. It got to go south.
Not money, bearer bonds.
Right. It's important. Right, it turns
bearer
out.
Bearer bonds.
It is a plot that only works in the 80s because in the 80s they changed the laws around bearer bonds.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it wouldn't work now. Yeah, it wouldn't work today. Yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah, so it's a bunch of like business people being held hostage, and the baddies, like, the plan goes a little sideways, and then John McClane, like, noted ass kicker, is like, well, I can fix this. I'm a beat cop. I'll turn this whole fucking thing around.
Yep.
And he pretty much does.
Good.
And yeah, but yeah, so he, I mean, he takes on every single terrorist guy like single-handedly. And at some point, he ends up without shoes, and they shoot out a bunch of glass, and he has to walk over it, like, very, very slowly and very, very painfully.
He actually starts very long the movie without shoes. Like, he starts all of the major plot points without shoes. So when he's on the airplane,
when he lands on the plane.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, when he lands on the plane, the guy sitting next to him is like, oh, if you're airsick, what you need to do is take your shoes off and like make fists with your feet on a carpet.
Oh,
so that's how he starts the
advice when sitting in a plane full of recycled air is like, you take off your feet or your feet. Fuck. Take off your shoes.
Cut off your feet.
Take off your shoes so we can all smell them.
He waits
till he gets to the till his destination before he does that.
And that was the guy's suggestion as well. He was like, "When as soon as you get home, take off your shoes, take off your socks, and just knead the carpet like you're a kitten.
Make muffins. Yeah. Yeah. Got it.
Yep. Those biscuits.
So I guess skipping through a lot of plot, he walks on all this glass, and it's like a very famous scene. And then later on, at the very end, he has to fall off of a building tied to a fire hose, and then he has to kick in a window with these glassed up garbage feet, and it's rough, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's so much feet blood in this movie. It's just so unpleasant.
Yeah. So, well, but
Erica, you are still doing, you're still doing that. It is
part in the curtain. Yeah.
I was just waiting for someone.
Erica and I have been making, Erica and I have been, I was doing it too. We were making kitty, biscuit muffins. Motions with our hands.
So I kind of mentioned this, but this gets to one of my other points is, this movie is so wonderfully American, like, so beautifully American pride. Like, John McClane is a New York cop, and all these terrorists are like German vaguely, and I mean Rickman's
they're
British
Nazis.
I guess I don't know.
Well, Rickman plays a German character.
Yeah,
does he? Because he speaks very British. Okay, sure. Around this era, the only other thing that I could think of was like Rocky IV, where it's like American guy fights foreign guy, and you know, I guess in that case didn't work out so good. But
What are you talking about? The end of Rocky IV is Sylvester Stallone ends the Cold War by punching a guy and then making a speech.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean... Okay. Maybe I don't remember that movie accurately. I don't know. So my point was that.
Because we're all one human race, and we're running this race together, and we gotta do it. Cause like, hey, I just wanted to talk to me.
That might be the best impression we've ever had.
That was really good.
That's not bad.
Wow.
Yeah. That was incomprehensibly good. Yeah.
Is Stallone on this
because Stallone is incomprehensible.
Yeah, yeah. For our Christmas episode, welcome Sylvester Stallone.
Hey, Sly, I lived in Philly too for a while. I never ran up those steps though, because I'm not an asshole.
Yeah.
That's true. You do see a lot of assholes running up those steps sometimes.
I have run up those steps.
Yeah, case in point.
The Final Countdown.
That song's not in Rocky.
That's almost Cheap Trick. That's close.
Close
Cheap
enough.
Trick's not in Rocky either. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, so I don't know what the hell.
Which what?
Are you guys thinking of dun da 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 da?
Oh yeah,
that's
the
score of Rocky 1, and Zach is thinking of Survivor, who did Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, yeah, that one. That's yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, anyway. So,
moving on.
Glossing over all my dumbness. Rocky IV is like very bad, obviously very bad. But this movie
Rocky
IV
is my second least favorite Rocky.
Sure. Okay. Checks out.
But this movie does.
I didn't see Creed yet. Rocky VI
oh,
is
Creed
my
is
least
very
favorite
good.
Rocky. Rocky V doesn't exist.
All right. I thought you were disparaging upon Dolph Lundgren, but I don't know, man.
No, Dolph is the best. Dolph, he who has several advanced degrees and speaks seven languages.
Mensa
no, we do
member.
Not talk ill of Dolph Lundgren on this show.
Yeah. Mensa oh, member of course Dolph not. Lundgren. To be fair, I hear he is a dick, but he's very smart. This is true. Yeah. He was not great
potato,
on the set
potato.
Of Expendables 2 or 3. I don't know.
Hey, guys, what movie are we talking about this week? Because I don't remember.
Yeah, shit.
Die
I forgot.
Hard!
Right.
Hey, Die
so,
Hard.
Fucking Die Hard is like, when I was watching this, I was like, this is a Nick Cage movie minus the like silly Nick Cage bullshit. And then it's like a Rocky movie minus all of the like dumb Sylvester Stallone bullshit. Like it's the perfect confluence of like everything that is good about both of those things minus all the bad shit. It's like it's very enjoyable. It's very
yeah. I agree. This movie fucking rules.
yeah. Anyway, I don't know. Something about feet. I forgot where we were.
Bloody
anyway.
Feet, no good.
Oh yeah,
hold
there's
on.
he walks on glass, and there's a really extended scene of him pulling glass out of his feet, which is brutal.
So speaking of extended scenes, this movie is long as hell. It's really fucking long.
It's like 2 hours long. It's 132
minutes.
That's
shorter than most movies today.
That's no 2:12. Yeah. Okay, 132. 2 hours 12 minutes is crazy long for an action.
Yeah.
Movie.
No.
That's very long.
For an action movie,
I will say that.
I
was actually when I went to rewatch this and I saw that it was that long, I was shocked because it moves so well that I didn't realize it was that long.
Very much agreed. Yeah, I had exactly the same experience. I was like, oh, this like should be very arduous and terrible, but it was actually very enjoyable because there's never like a down, like a lull in anything. They keep the pace very nicely. Yeah.
So Erica, I think because we're all over the map here, I'll just take over and do a quick summary for you.
Yeah, that probably would work well.
Sounds good.
Woof. Bruce Willis shows up at his wife's Christmas party. The terrorists show up, and then there's just a sequence of like sequence after sequence of him like fighting different members of this terrorist squad, essentially.
Yeah, and it goes from 0 to 100 like in 30 seconds.
Does he like face off with Alan Rickman and have like an awesome?
Several times
versus Mr. Smith.
Yeah. No, well, not that. Maybe, but
no.
Well, they don't karate fight, but yeah.
But yeah,
they do have face-offs
several times. Yeah, Seth is right. Mm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well,
they wedge that in. Yeah.
The first time that they actually meet face to face, Alan Rickman pretends to be an American. And is like one of the hostages, and is like, "Oh, please don't hurt me! My best American accent."
It's okay. It's honestly pretty good.
It's like, pretty upsetting.
I was reading that they added that scene. That scene wasn't in the original script, but they found out that Rickman could do a passable American voice, and they added that scene.
Yeah.
I buy it.
I think he let himself. I think he gave himself up when John McClane, Bruce Willis, offers him a cigarette, and he held it like a German instead of an American. Yeah.
Very, very utilitarian.
Which is to say, he held it between his thumb and forefinger, underhanded, while smoking it.
Yep. Well, I mean, to be fair, that scene ends like Rickman thinks he's going to grab this like stashed gun and kill him, and John McClane has already thought of this and thwarted him. Like, he's unstoppable. He's just fucking unstoppable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the terrorist plot is really just a ruse so they could steal all these bearer bonds and people will assume that they've been murdered already. so no one will come looking for them. So they're really just thieves. And then John McClane ruins their plans and eventually basically kills every single one of them.
Very slowly and methodically, yeah.
Okay.
So the real, like, tug of war of the movie is that John McClane is acting sort of on his own, and all the cops, the LA cops, LA or Chicago? I don't remember.
LA. They're in LA.
Yeah. All the LA cops are like, we have a plan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're like, we have a plan. This will be good. And Bruce Willis is acting completely like on his own with Reginald Bell Johnson. He has gone rogue. And Reginald Bell Johnson is like this like sad beat cop desk job guy who like nobody gives a shit about. And he's like, nah, I think this dude like knows what's up. And so basically the cops are telling him the entire movie, like, fucking stop what you're doing. Like, we have this under control. And John McClane is like, no, you're all idiots. Like, I have this under control. Just listen.
And every scene is Reginald Bell Johnson telling them what Bruce Willis is about to do and being right about it.
Yeah.
While the other cops are totally wrong. Yeah. It makes for a couple of funny moments.
It does. And the worst cop, the like chief, is the principal from Breakfast Club, which is a really nice sort of
I was going to point out that a lot of the casting in this movie of minor villains, so like villains that aren't terrorists trying to kill people,
right,
are all assholes from other famous 80s movies.
Yep.
So like the shitty chief of police is played by the principal from the Breakfast Club.
Yeah, Paul Gleason.
That's the only natural like progression. Like, after he got kicked out for being a shitty principal, like, he had to go and be a shitty cop. That's
he gets the natural progression. Somehow climbs the ranks of the LAPD.
Yes.
Well, prove that you can be shitty to children, then you get to be shitty to adults and minorities.
Agreed.
That's how it works. Yeah.
Agreed. Yes.
Well, I think he was the vice principal in Breakfast Club, and he's like the assistant chief of police in this. So, like,
oh, you're totally right.
So he just did a parallel move. He didn't actually rise in the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting point.
If we want to call that a parallel move,
lateral
assistant
it's
principal
lateral.
Of Nowhere High School to assistant chief of police of the LAPD.
It's a horizontal.
I'm sorry, Zach,
move.
But
it's a
Winnetka,
horizontal.
Illinois is a place. Come on, like.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the LA riots happened like 2 years after this happened, so I'm gonna bet he was responsible for that. Probably. Yeah.
You're positing that this man is responsible for the LA riots? Holy
shit! Absolutely, yes.
Wowzers!
Sure.
Heard it here first.
Yep.
Anyway,
you're on conspiracy really theory cast.
It changes every week.
So there's a really shitty opportunistic reporter in the movie. In the movie, and he's
what the hell was that?
He's played by William Atherton.
Yeah.
And you may know him better as Walter Peck, the EPA agent from the Ghostbusters.
Oh, I was going to say the lead scientist on Biodome.
Scientist from Real Genius.
I was gonna say Real Genius. Oh, man.
Turns out that William Atherton only plays douchebags.
Yeah.
Douchebag scientists.
Yeah.
Yeah,
weird.
Kind of.
Very weird.
Well, and a reporter, apparently.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was also a shitty vice principal on Lost for one episode, so.
Lost?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was Lost for exactly one episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
Lost. I buy it.
No, it was in like a Flash Sideways or something. I don't remember.
Another horizontal move.
Yeah, exactly, Erica.
Anyway,
what other shitty people are in, like 80s people are in this movie? Oh, Robert Davi from Goonies is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh shit, he is. He's
I mean, Robert Davi is still a shitty person today, so
Yeah. We talked about this a day or two ago. Was Coke guy that gets like ceremoniously murdered, was he famous? Because
his head exploded.
I don't think he was.
His head exploded.
So
yeah,
much
for sure.
So much explode.
Oh, boy. Yeah. He might be the shittiest character in this entire movie.
Yeah, there's a character in the movie who starts the movie off hitting on John McClane's wife.
Yep.
And then does coke in front of cop John McClane.
Yeah.
And his
boss. And then
boss.
Tries to get in. Yeah. Yeah. And then tries to get in good with the terrorists. By like, yep. I know how to get to this guy because I know about his wife and kids. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's that moment is really fun because there's sort of like, there's not like an actual boo from all the hostages, but there's like an implied like, oh, fuck you. But yeah. But then he was wrong and just a cock, and then they shoot him in the face, and it was good.
Yeah. And his head explodes.
Oh, there's also a scene. During the hostage crisis portion where he's doing bumps of coke.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
They make sure to imply that he's like an addict just over and over and over. Yeah.
Yeah.
So many minutes.
I'm surprised that when they shoot him in the face, white powder doesn't fly everywhere.
Like a poof.
He's yeah. like a, yeah. like one of those mushrooms you step on and all the spores come out.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you
same
go.
Same thing. Same yeah. third thing.
Yeah.
Cocaine magic.
The Hans Gruber, Alan Rickman's like main henchman,
Carl,
yeah, is played by ballet star,
really?
Alexander Gudanov, who
wait, is this the long blonde hair?
Yeah,
blonde hair?
Yeah. So yeah. He was in the Bolshoi Theater and was
holy
in
shit.
The States in New York in 79 and like wanted asylum. And then there was like a whole shit ton of drama where like the KGB had his wife taken back to the States and there was all kinds of Brezhnev and Jimmy Carter had like a 3 day long conversation to try to like solve this international crisis, and then he goes on and is Carl in Die Hard,
and then he would go on to be shot by Reginald Vell Johnson in a movie.
Yeah,
yep.
Realizing like his true potential. Wow, that's incredible.
Oh yeah, yeah, he unloads an entire revolver in that man.
Wait, I thought didn't Bruce Willis like string him up with one of those chains? I thought that was his end.
Yeah, but then he
comes back
that,
at the end.
Yeah, he does that super villain thing where he like climbs out of the rubble and, you know, has to be shot a bunch by our best friend cop.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Oh, he is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fucking Reginald Vell Johnson is the ultimate buddy cop without a buddy in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, true. My God. It's so true.
He's like such the obvious buddy cop guy, but it's just him. It's very sad.
Yeah.
Can
He provides all the moral support for everything that Bruce Willis does. He's like, dude, just keep doing what you're doing. I know you're competent.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, he is.
Can
he
I
is like the
can
only
I point out
character.
The Can I point out the part in the movie where I like teared up?
Sure.
Oh, okay, sure.
It was when it's all over, or we think it's all over anyway. And Bruce Willis and Bonnie Bedelia are like reconciled and like huddled together under a blanket, and you see Reginald Vell Johnson walk up, and Bruce knows instinctively that this is the guy who's been talking to him the whole time.
Ah.
This is the guy who helped him through this the worst day of his life.
Yep.
And they just see each other and lock eyes, and they slowly walk toward each other and then hug. And I teared up because Christmas.
Here, here's the thing, though. Like,
it's beautiful.
It's not a Christmas movie unless there is at least one scene that makes you tear up.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
I guess.
Like, we can't be happy on Christmas. We have to be sad too.
No, but that's a good question. When was this released? Was it released around Christmas? Like, was this intended to be a Christmas movie?
I think it's a summer release.
It's a summer release. It came out on July 12th.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, that's when action movies come out, I guess, but
yeah.
Weird. Huh. It's such a good Christmas movie.
So, actually, I wanted to talk about that. Is it a Christmas movie? I mean,
yes. So the internet has voted. It gets, yes, obviously, yes.
I know. But so, like, it takes place on Christmas.
True.
Yeah.
They play it out with a Christmas song.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a Christmas party gone awry. But what else about it makes it a Christmas movie?
So many characters are doing their own incidental music, and that's by humming Christmas songs. There are like four characters that are just like something blah blah. And they're just doing that all the time throughout the whole movie. That makes it a Christmas movie.
I buy it. I totally buy it. Yep.
I also buy it. That seems okay. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like the group has spoken. So say we.
I mean, we should say
if you have an argument on the other side, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I don't.
I just feel like it's a movie that happens on Christmas, but it might not be a Christmas movie.
Well, think of another movie that happens on Christmas that isn't a Christmas movie.
Santa Claus. No, that's definitely a Christmas movie. Shit.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I got nothing. I think you're right.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess that's true.
Wait, Zach, what's your favorite Christmas movie?
Oh,
one that also has Alan Rickman in it, and he's a douchebag.
Yeah, it's Love Actually. We've covered this.
right.
Woof.
Yeah. Is that? I mean, I guess
we're gonna have to set you straight on that next year, Zach.
Yeah, I was gonna say The Passion of the Christ, but that's technically an Easter movie.
Yeah, true.
Yep. Nobody's watching that at Christmas time. Womp womp.
You might be right.
Did anybody have any other like specific things they wanted to bring up? Or?
Oh yeah, I got so many things.
Yeah, I feel like Seth wants to shit all over this, and I'm very excited for it.
Oh no, I'm not going to shit all over it, but I am this movie is incredibly over the top. Like,
oh yeah,
there's so many like soliloquies where people are holding up skulls.
What?
To be or not to be?
You mean like figuratively, right?
Well, maybe
that is.
I mean,
the question.
They do that Alexander speech. They like. I think Hans Gruber is like, and Alexander wept, for there will no war worlds to conquer.
I'm yeah, like, and Alexander wept. Yeah,
it's crazy. But the most important, and it's quite enjoyable, but the most important thing that I want to talk about is the horrible consequence of this movie.
Oh.
And that is, this movie was immensely popular, right?
That it franchised itself?
Sure.
Well, no, I don't really care about that, because I love franchises.
Years of other movies? Yeah.
you know that.
Three.
Yeah, you wrote a 10-movie franchise in one episode. Episode, 10 movies.
Seth, I've heard some questionable things about some other franchises that you may or may not enjoy, i.e. like Pirates and, you know.
What?
I'm judging.
Oh, Seth famously not a fan of Pirates.
I know, but that's an awesome franchise.
Now, Zach, when you edit that, overlay some bells into my doing that.
Okay. Oh, Christmas good. Pirates. Cool. Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
Christmas Pirates. Will do. Yes.
The thing I'm talking about is this gave Bruce Willis the ability to make one of the worst movies in the world forever. That is The Hudson Hawk.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Boy. I was hoping you were going to bring up Hudson Hawk.
It was because this movie had, like, he claimed that it had really good Jersey humor, quote unquote, and they wanted to bring that Jersey humor to its own individual film, The Hudson Hawk.
One second. Ooh.
Now, I've lived near New Jersey for most of my life, and I don't remember ever running into somebody who had pre-printed business cards with responses on them.
Yeah.
Like in the fucking movie Hudson Hawk. Like,
Yeah, I mean, we're clearly not going to fake it, but do you want me to, like, just do the IMDb plot of Hudson Hawk real quick?
Yes.
Well, sure. That other way more famous movie podcast did a very good rendition of Hudson Hawk. But yes.
Oh, multiple podcasts have done Hudson Hawk.
Yeah. But for
our 70 something viewers here,
yeah,
listeners here. Yeah,
for those that listen, nice.
10 plus 9.
look, they deserve this.
79 is just a 69 plus a person watching.
Wait,
that's
does this mean we need to start a store and sell Nikes in them? Shit! Oh, this is so much work.
Oh, god damn it, Zach.
Oh boy,
you can't force a Waco joke, Zach. You
can't. I wanna. Mm-hmm, all right, go ahead, Seth. Sorry.
The very brief summary of Hudson Hawk is: a cat burglar is forced to steal Da Vinci works of art for a world domination plot.
Richard E. Grant is in that movie, and he is a treasure, so I will hear nothing less.
All right, where are we at? Are we at ratings yet? We should probably ratings, huh?
Sure, why not?
There is one last quote I wanted to do.
Oh, sure.
Is, because the FBI shows up, right? And then they get blown up by C4.
They sure
do. And assistant principal he has the best quote, and it's, "We're going to need some more FBI guys now, I guess."
Wait. Like,
yes. Yeah, that like is they're a good like, line. You're right.
That's that nice. they're like G.I. Joe figures, and you just go and buy some more?
Yes. <Yeah. laughs> They're the replacements.
I will say, I think the FBI agents in this movie are the inspiration for the NSA agents, and Zach bleep that out.
Ooh, yep, they're just, for sure.
Yeah. They're just bro-y dudes who, like, are involved in the situation and want to shoot guns. Like,
Yeah. They're very expendable, yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess we'll get to ratings then now. IMDb rates this at an 8.2.
Holy shit.
That's really high.
It's definitely, I think it's in the top 100.
My movie's not gonna make
123.
It.
Oh,
it's
so
number 123.
It's number 123. Okay, but still, like, it's very, very highly rated.
Yeah.
I want to see how many. That's 654,000 ratings.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yep.
That might be the most volume that we've done thus far, I think. Probably.
No, I don't know. I think probably those horrible horror movies that we talked about had higher numbers.
Yeah, Conjuring probably had like a billion. Yeah.
Those aren't horrible. Shut up. Whatever.
Oh, okay.
Get your own fucking podcast.
Whoa.
Fuck you.
That
stop having me on yours.
That was unnecessarily aggressive.
Whoa, man. Oof, ba-boof.
Oof, ba-boof.
All right. So, ratings. Erica, I really liked your heart-shaped coffin idea. That was great. That was really great. When...
Thank you. I also thought that was a great idea and just couldn't help myself and immediately put it in there.
Yep. Yeah. I thought that was really good. But your movie was quite uplifting, which is something that I just hate.
Please.
That's because you hate life.
Accurate. But
that's
I do love
me.
Death. Ergo, because you had your characters die, you get a 7.9.
What?
Hey! Nice.
Well, thank
you,
Seth.
I think it actually
would
be...
I very much appreciate it.
I think it would be a very, like, entertaining movie if, like, all of the moving parts go together well enough.
Yeah.
And then as for
hashtag nice.
Yeah. hashtag 69 plus 10.
Yep.
As for the real Die Hard, it is definitely worth watching. Because like it is this quintessential American 80s action movie. Like,
also because there's more death in it than my movie?
Well, yeah, but it's also more gory, and I don't necessarily need gore in my death, but, you know, whatever.
Okay.
I think Die Hard is a lot smarter than, like, the traditional 80s action movie, but it still feels like the traditional 80s action movie.
Yeah, and I'm I'm going to deduct some points because all of the German German characters didn't actually speak German, and there are like grammatical mistakes all over the place. But
hashtag job market. Hashtag job market.
Hashtag job market.
Just remember that resume is coming from Seth Fartnoise, PhD.
Seth Fartnoise. There it is. Oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give Real Die Hard an 8.
8. Okay.
Cool.
Oof.
Sorry, like Erica, you're going up against a real hard movie.
Yeah. I was gonna say we set you up for failure here. Like this movie is just so good.
Yeah.
One of the conversations we had earlier this week was we better come with some background info to the movie because we like it too much to goof on it.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah. All right, Lee, you go.
Sure. Erica, I thought your movie was good. I thought that, I don't know, me and my partner, we have a hobby of watching shitty Christmas movies basically from the start of November till the end of December.
Okay.
And I thought that your movie would fit as both a Hollywood movie and one of those crazy Lifetime bullshits just as well.
I'll take it.
Yeah. You fit every demographic you could imagine. And I thought it was really good, and it had that little uplift at the end, and I liked it. Plus people died, as Seth said, which is always nice.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is always 69 hashtag nice. So I give your movie a 7.5.
Okay.
Die Hard is Die Hard, and it turns out a little extra trivia, former guest of the show, our dear friend Jim, member of Machine Arms, check him out on Bandcamp.
Yeah, please do. They're very
his
good.
His favorite movie is Die Hard, and
wow,
it's not my favorite movie. Yeah.
Top one.
Yep, top 1%. His favorite movie is Die Hard, and it's not my favorite movie, but damn, it's pretty fucking good. So I'm going to give Die Hard an 8.
Fuck you!
Okay. I mean, you knew this was going to be a tough one.
No, fuck you.
Yeah, we have brought you in for exclusively fucking rippers, man.
Yeah, like, that's no true. Yeah, Lebowski and Die Hard. Yeah, you didn't stand a chance.
Nah, dudes. Fuck you.
Oof. So Erica's was very good. I would say, It crosses. It does sound like a bucket list crossed with like a
John Q.
Like a crime. No, I was gonna say more like Shawshank. Like these people are criminals, but you do feel for them. Like they're doing it for a good reason. You know.
I was totally feeling bucket list. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, it's bucket list and Shawshank. Like everything is lovable. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna give you like an 8
mm-hmm.
on that one. It's very good. I think it would play on TBS and get those residuals for like at least 15 years, surely.
Mm-hmm.
We're all about making that money, and
we're talking Michael territory here.
Yeah. sadly, Die Hard is just so good. It's so good.
Uh-huh.
It's actual Die Hard is like phenomenally good.
Uh-huh.
Like, I like it so much.
It's the rare movie that lives up to the hype. It really
is. Yes, mm-hmm. Very much so. Also, like as a Christmas movie, we talked about this a bit. Like it's It's like not really a Christmas movie, but like if you're gonna watch one on Christmas, like why not this? Obviously this. Mm-hmm. It's so fun. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm gonna go like an 8.5 on actual Die Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Guess you don't want those Christmas Erica? Presents.
Yeah, I say go throw that shit in the fire.
Bitch. I guess. All right. So yeah. Sounds like. It was a close one. Again, I think we set Erica up for failure.
Sure did.
Very tough.
Yeah. Yep.
So
none of you, like you are getting Christmas well. Presents. None of you are getting Christmas presents.
I didn't expect one, but I am heartbroken.
You should be. You should be.
So, very well done, but, you know, Die Hard's a very good movie. Next week, we're going to have Seth, doing It Could Happen to You, which is apparently. That's a fan favorite for several of us, I think.
No idea.
Yep.
Yeah. Since it's our New Year's episode, we wanted to usher in the new year with our first ever Nick Cage movie.
Yeah, it is. It's a, let's say, possibly more obscure one. I wouldn't say less famous, but like definitely less sort of well known. Sure.
It's nowhere near as quotable as a lot of other Nick Cage movies. That's for sure.
Definitely yes. Definitely. So that'll be great. And I guess Merry Christmas, everybody. Seth did a Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Again, like I think I speak for everyone here saying like
we started doing this.
Yeah, that too. But we started doing this like just as a random idea that in our like chat thread that we do every day, as just a way to keep in touch. And like, I know that we don't have a ton of listeners yet, but we really didn't expect to have as many as we do. And we're super excited about it. And like, thank you guys.
Yeah. Wow. That was weirdly heartfelt. Well done, buddy.
It's like you have emotions like on Christmas.
Ooh.
My Christmas gift to you is to be vulnerable, and as is tradition, I will sing you out with a traditional Christmas dirge.
Mister, will you fuck this corpse? My mama, please.
God bless us, everyone. Yep.